You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
How did you kill him, Falada? How?
The old way, Carlson. A leaded metal shaft penetrating not through the heart, but through the energy center 2 inches below the heart. Not steel, but leaded iron.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Wolfman's got a heart!
Make love in the hammock!
Good.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 101 for the 25th of September, 2010. I am David McVeigh, and I am joined in studio by, all right, from one side to the other, Josh Philpott. How are you?
I'm here this time. I'm not.
No, that's right. You're actually here. But
we started the last show, and I was
he was still making coffee. And I am joined by Callum Austin Wilson in the returning seat. How are you, Callum?
I'm good. I'm tired.
Yeah, me too.
He's always tired. You're always tired.
Oh, you're one to talk.
I don't know what you're talking about, Dave. I think you're... Shut up.
All right. Now, this is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of GeekActually.com and or the Geek Actually Network, depending on which way you look at it. And this week, we back to having a little bit of entertainment buzz. Last week, we dropped it out because we had two films to do. So we're bringing back a little bit of news. Not too much, just a little bit. We have a brand new list of five. And because of the type of film we're doing today, our list of five is five foreign language movies that you must see. Okay? Now, it's not necessarily the best. It's not necessarily in any particular order. Just five foreign language films you must see, okay? You could say like that book title, Five Films You Must See Before You Die, okay?
Not a very long book.
Not a very long book at all, no. Because this week we are going to record the second film in the Millennium series, The Girl Who Played with Fire. As you can see, we're not too thrilled. But let's jump straight into this. Before we get into the actual review, let's just say, Callum, how you been? I know you're tired, but how you been?
I've been fine. I've been working. I'm on holiday now.
Oh, that's good. That's always good. Holidays are always a good thing.
And I, interesting, this week I may be going to see Let the Right One In.
The American remake. Mm. So what's it called again?
Let Me In.
Let Me In. Let Me In. That's actually getting, I got to say, I'm surprised to say it, but it's actually getting good reviews. They're actually saying that it's actually not a bad remake, and they're actually saying some people are actually going so far as to say it's as good as the original. I'm not so sure about that. But anyway.
I think it'll be interesting.
I do want to see it. I'm curious to see it. I really, really love the original. Anyway, Josh is off again. Well, that's okay because I'm going to run through this film while Josh is running off getting coffee. So the movie that we are doing this week is The Girl Who Played with Fire. Directed by Daniel Alfredson, who is a different director to the first film, which is to its detriment, I think. But anyway, and written by Jonas Frickberg. Now, I'm going to apologize to all Swedish people in advance that I'm going
whole review is
going to
be a mess.
That I am going to destroy everybody's pronunciation of your names. I'm sorry. I'm not very good at that, okay? But I apologize in advance. I'm doing the best I can. Based on the novel by Stieg Larsson, it stars. Here we go. Michael Nyquist, Noomi Rapace, Lena Andre, Peter Anderson, Yasmin Garbi, Ralph Carrison, and Georgi Stakhov.
Keep going.
That's as many as I wrote down. After that, they became truly unpronounceable. All right. This is the second film in the Millennium Trilogy, which started with The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, as computer hacker Lisbeth and journalist Mikkel investigate a sex trafficking ring. Lisbeth is accused of 3 murders, causing her to go on the run while Mikkel, or Michael, works to clear her name. Source of that is IMDb, and it's actually wrong. It's not entirely wrong, but they're not actually working together to solve a sex trafficking ring. She's off doing her own thing at the beginning.
Sort of fought around separately.
Anyway, so I don't know where this... it's not quite right. Anyway, you can watch the trailer here, or there is a link in our show notes that will take you to the trailer. Here is the trailer. Now I have to say right off the bat that finding a trailer for this is really hard work for a radio show when you consider that they're all in a foreign language, okay? So what I did manage to round up was the U.S. trailer for it, but because they've avoided using any of the dialogue, because it would be subtitled, a lot of it's music. So for our audio listeners, this is going to be abridged, okay? But for the video watchers right now, here is the trailer for the girl who played with fire.
This year, one cinematic event captivated audiences across the globe. Now, the girl with the dragon tattoo will play with fire. The girl who played with fire.
So painful.
I don't do enough of that when they make trailers. They don't have enough of the guy who obviously has been smoking since he was like five.
I love that dude, man. That guy.
Fire with fire.
All right.
That was quite possibly the worst trailer of all time.
Well, for this film, absolutely, because that didn't represent this film
just
in any way, shape, or form.
And I just love, the fact that, like, one of the main things that they bring up in that is just all these fucking famous posts going breathtaking, spectacular. What part?
Yeah.
Tell me what fucking part was so fucking breathtaking. Anyway, sorry,
all right.
Keep going.
Who wants to start off on this? I'm going to start off on this.
I'm not starting.
All right, I'm going to say that if you go back and listen to our previous episode where we reviewed The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, I wasn't particularly enamored with the original film. I didn't say it was the worst film ever made. I didn't say it was a particularly terrible film. It was just a very long film, and I thought it could have used another pass through the editing bay. I felt that it just didn't quite work for me. I did say some positive stuff. I love Noomi Rapace. I think she is wonderful as Lisbeth, and I really quite like Michael Knight. Nyquist, I think is how you pronounce it. I quite like him as well as the character. I liked the story of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. I like the ideas behind it. I just didn't think it was very well fleshed out. I think it'd be a better book, quite frankly. And the book's obviously...
I would just like to bring up for anyone that, sort of is thinking about the whole book thing. It's like... I don't understand, and I really don't. I want to sit down in a room with one of these guys that said these movies were breathtaking or bedazzling or whatever. Look, these films were good, right? I'm not going to at all sort of take away from that. But the writing in these books is no better than something out of an Alex Cross novel or...
Well, we don't know, because the book could be much better written, you know?
No, dude, but, like, the subject material speaks it, man. I'm sorry. But, like, it's just...
It is supposed to be better. The books are supposed to be more fleshed out, and it is written originally in Swedish.
Mm. Yeah. Well, look, I mean, there is that.
Okay,
but...
so now it comes to this film. That was The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, which I also think is a really dumb title for a film because, really, it had no relevance to it. The original title of the book was better.
This one particularly.
No. Well, the only reason why this one has got this name is because of an event of the first film, not an event in this film. Anyway, this is the sequel, the second one in the trilogy, and quite frankly, I thought it was much worse than the original, because the new director who took over, this Daniel Alfredson, doesn't know how to handle action at all.
Yeah.
So the sequences, which are supposed to be tense, really fall flat. They just feel kind of pedestrian in the way that they're put together. Mm. Everybody feels vaguely like they're sleepwalking through this film. Everybody feels vaguely...
It's almost like they got given another contract for another film, but no one was really into it.
No, exactly. Feels... Also, there's also that thought that what happened to the original director? Did he choose not to do it, or was there a fight and he didn't want to come back to it? Is the cast affected by that decision?
The best parts about the first film, in my opinion, were some of the really visceral scenes and how well he handles it. Like, there are scenes in
like
that
movie.
Like
the rape scenes and stuff.
Yeah, where you're just sitting there going, Jesus, this is fucked up.
Yeah.
And, like, that takes really strong...
And you never
strong...
had that feeling in this film.
No.
And there's some events that you should have had that feeling, and you just never did.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, my opinion is that I just thought it was a lackluster sequel to what I thought was a fairly mediocre original. So it's kind of...
Interestingly enough, I would love to know, Callum, what did you think? Because, I mean, you really liked the first one, so...
I did. I thought that the first one was... I thought it was very grueling and long, like you said.
Mm.
And it was like a real slog to get through, and there's people getting raped left and right, and you're just sitting there kind of going, fuck. I feel so bad for everyone involved. But I thought like that was the point. We came into that movie, and it was like, that was a really harrowing experience, and I really felt like, especially the rape scene. Yeah. Just like, I feel like, kind of, we've, like, Numi and I have come through this together. And,
yeah.
And I really enjoyed it for that. But this one, I was expecting that same sort of, you know, like, punching your soul, sort of, for 2 hours.
Punching your soul, I like that. Write that one down, we're going to steal that.
But it was that, but for all the wrong reasons. It was like punching your soul because it was just boring. It was the action scenes, especially, like you mentioned, where they were...
An action plays a much bigger part in this film.
Yeah.
And so the action needed to be better in this film because it played a much bigger part.
Everyone in this movie just being like a kung fu maniac. Like fucking one of her exes, the girl, gets like kidnapped, and before she gets kidnapped, she freaking near like martial art John Woo's this dude like, and just like fly kicks in ways that normal people just can't do.
Oh, yeah. God. In our chat room, Octane has just said, apparently there is a 3-hour version as well.
Wow. That's where they cut out all the bits.
Is there a version I can see with just the bits they cut out? Because I'm sure I'd enjoy that more.
And, Octane, you're right. The original title makes way more sense to the first one. Because the original title of the first one was The Girl and the Men Who Hated Women. And that makes much more sense.
It's not a very flowy title.
It's not. And The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is much more provocative. It's pointless.
Yeah.
Anyway, so from the person who actually liked the first one...
This one was... I was very disappointed. Because it was just... I felt...
It was sort of amateurish,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, very true, very true.
Especially the fight scenes with the Jaws bad guy sort of character.
Oh.
Especially in a movie nowadays when it's not like a 70s, 80s Bond movie, having some sort of like hulking bad guy who's like, okay, I'm gonna do this. It's silly. And a movie like this, where it's about sex trafficking and whatnot, having such stupid, crappy action, stupid characters.
It doesn't help. It's like they were trying to just fill the holes between the storyline, and it's like, it's directed by, I don't know, you could almost call him like Zack Snyder's like wannabe apprentice. Like, that's how bad it is. It's like random slowdown and like very odd sensibility to action scenes that weren't actually that dramatically amazing or breathtaking at all. They were just average.
Even in the preview screening we went to, everyone's obviously there, sitting there to take it seriously and review it. There's people laughing.
Yeah, and like the were laughable. Yeah. Really laughable action scenes.
Very disappointed with this film. And yeah.
Well, I'll give you an idea. One. I've actually been pondering getting the girl with the dragon tattoo out on Blu-ray, because it's on Blu-ray now, and having another look at it to see what I missed or whatever. I've actually been pondering this to go rent it and, you know, have a look at it. I don't want to see the second one again.
I would.
There's nothing in the second one that really drags me to it at all.
Yeah. Like, the first one is kind of the film that I think if I was kind of watching in the background, I'd really kind of enjoy it. Like, it's a solid thriller. You know what I mean? And it's like, it's as good as anything from that era that I would put on as a background noise kind of a movie, like The Bone Collector or something like that. Not amazing films, but, you know, decent thrillers. Yeah. And it's the same sort of thing.
I'll give the first one, the fact that the first one at least is well made.
Exactly.
It feels like it's put together by a competent filmmaker, whereas the second one, you're right, it feels like amateur hour. It feels like film students.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of got that kind of tacky feel to it. And sequences that don't make a whole lot of sense, like the burning in the barn sequence, which didn't really kind of jelly. So they're going, why is he just leaving them there?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I have this gun, but fire is so much more fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then they escape outside.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And that's the stupidest part of that, because that brought on nothing but laughs when he's standing there and you see them run past in the background. It's like, this just seems stupid.
It almost felt like the scene in Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, exactly. It's that whole kind of like tittering laugh.
Yeah, no, it's not. It was not a good film. It was not. It was not a suitable follow-up too. And I got to say, yesterday while I was putting together the show notes, I actually saw the trailer for The Girl Who Kicked a Hornet's Nest, the new one. Now, it's a foreign language trailer. It's the original Swedish trailer, so I didn't bother putting it on the board because it's all in foreign language. Yeah. But it looks pretty much exactly the same as The Girl Who Played with Fire. It's really, you look at it and go, it's got the same character. Because unlike, and this is where it gets really weird, because the first film is standalone. And you can watch the first film and you go, okay, it ends and, you know, she goes off on her own way. And you go, that's it. That's the end of the film. Whereas this one ends and you go, oh, God, we're doing the Empire Strikes Back middle film thing. I feel like we have to come back for the last part because they don't resolve it.
That was dude, worst ending I've seen in a film in a long time. It was like, you know what it was? It was like an 80s action end where, like, you know, they've blown up, you know, the entire West Africa and, you know, terrorists are just nothing but bullet-ridden corpses all over the ground, and we kind of do that zoom out with the music playing. It was like that.
Yeah.
But without any sort of triumph. The bad guys escaped. She's fucking barely alive.
I remember when the film was actually ending, and the camera was pulling back, and you and I kind of looked at each other and was like, no, they can't do that. They can't end it right here. This is the wrong place to do this. And then, like, it just credits rolled.
You can't even give it, like, that it was trying to build suspense or anything, because there was nothing to suspense to. We don't even care about that other guy now. No. It's just, he was what? He was a giant Jaws character. He's not supposed to be important.
Thank you, Octane. Very good line. Octane says, proof that it isn't just Hollywood that suffers from sequelitis.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Word.
Word. Look, and with, you know, Sweden producing stuff like Let the Right One In, which was such a good film, and then to move to this trilogy. Okay, I know the books have made like super bestsellers, and I know everybody's going apeshit for the books. And I know,
yeah, but you know what, dude? In my defense, I just want to say, so have Twilight books.
Well, there is that. That's a very, very, very good point. Thank you very much for bringing me back to Earth. yeah, no, look, I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say I don't recommend this film. I think if you're intrigued by the Millennium Trilogy,
if you watch the first one, you've kind of got to watch this one. If you haven't, then just don't bother, because there's nothing you're going to see is going to totally...
Well, if you haven't seen the first one, don't bother with this one, period. Yeah, because it won't make any sense at all, because it's carrying the storyline through.
I would say if you've watched the first one, maybe watch it if you're going to watch the whole series. If you haven't watched any of them, wait until we tell you what the third one's like, and then we can give you a
thing of a
weather.
Yeah, let's see if they wrap it up okay in the third one. If they don't wrap it up in the third one, then we're finished with this thing.
I think the only reason to see this film would be if you were desperate to see the third one.
Yeah.
That would be the only reason, just for the setup.
Yeah, well, it's the Back to the Future 2 situation, which is Back to the Future 2 as a standalone film is not a very good film.
Yeah.
But you require it to get you to number 3, which is actually a much better film. So you need that middle piece just to fill in the holes.
But
you
also think Back to the Future is far better than this film, so...
I agree.
This film could have benefited for some Doc Brown.
Did you see it? Lloyd?
We're going to get sidetracked here, but did you see in the news Christopher Lloyd is back because they're doing a Back to the Future game? He's come back to record all the voices for Doc Brown.
Nice.
For the win.
There was a video of him doing them all in studio and him being like, glitch, Scott.
Excellent.
Doesn't it make you shudder just a little bit? You're like, yes. That kid in you just jumps into the air for a freeze frame. Bring it back 80s style.
Well, do you know what? I think we're going to end this review now, because I think we're all pretty much at the same page, which is
we're actually happy again, so let's just move on before it falls apart.
We're all pretty much in agreement that this is not a film that we're going to recommend. Yeah, go for it.
I just want to mention, and this doesn't happen a lot, the scene in it where she goes to the apartment and has sex with her friend, he has lesbian sex with her friend.
Oh, yeah. Good scene, by the way. One of the better scenes.
normally, I'm all for lesbian sex scenes. Mm. But in this case, waste of 5-10 minutes of filming that they could have done, put into something else. Literally nothing.
I don't know. I got from another point of view is that that was the only part that actually made me go, oh, okay, this is worth watching.
No, dude, I'm sorry. I'm with Callum. I just sat there the whole time. I was like, wow, way to, like, totally undersell sex in general.
I'm all for, like, you know, like, nude scenes if it fits the story, like in Piranha, but this one...
No, because Piranha's not exploited at all.
No.
Not at all. I also wanted to bring up
Piranha.
So did I. Yeah. Cheers. Absolutely. Yeah. I also want to bring up one little point about this film. Josh and I were talking about it. Now, when you've seen it, because the film hasn't come out yet. So it's it's come out now. It's this week. So it's now open as of Thursday. If you do go see it and you are in agreeance or disagreeance with us, please write to us at feedback@geekactually.com. I want to know if you agree with us or not, because I haven't seen the films more than once each, so I don't have an answer to this. I think the tattoo has changed.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the tattoo in the first film and the tattoo in the second film are two different tattoos. Mm. Now, it was so glaring, it took me out of the moment in the second film. When we were watching, she takes her shirt off, I went, that's not right.
Yeah.
So it immediately struck me. Callum's phone keeps vibrating on the table. So if you have seen both films, can you confirm or deny this? Because I've only seen both films once, but I'm sure that tattoo has changed.
Yeah.
Which disturbed me. Which that's a continuity.
Maybe a flaming cock up on their behalf, or maybe they did it on purpose.
Yeah, well, look, the other thing to look for, and I actually tried to find screen grabs on web, and nobody seems to...
She has a lot of money, so in the defense of, you know, sort of just avoiding it so that we can get on with our lives, there is a possibility she had the tattoo removed and got a new one.
Or, the other thought I had... This would be a nice touch, if it is, and that's why I wanted to try and find screen grabs, to see whether or not it had been added to. Because if you can see the original design, but it's been added to, then that makes sense. Mm. But it just looked different. And I don't know why it looks so different. And it kind of disturbed me. Continuity is a big thing.
Yeah.
You know? All right. Let's move away from this feature film because it's depressing me. And let's talk about Joaquin Phoenix again.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I have a picture of the poster. There we go. All right, so this is the poster for the I'm Still Here documentary. The reason why we're bringing up Joaquin Phoenix again is because the documentary is now out in the United States. We haven't got it here yet.
It is.
Sorry?
It's at the Verona.
Oh, it is out. Great. Well, we've got to go see it. Excellent. But it has now been confirmed, because even after it came out, nobody was still kind of there. Everybody was going, is it or isn't it, and so forth. The bottom line is it has been confirmed now by Casey Affleck, the director, who says that it is fake. All right. It says here, it's a terrific performance. It's a performance of his career. He says, speaking of Mr. Phoenix's 2-year portrayal of himself, this is from the New York Times. He says, on screen and off, as a bearded, drug-addled, aspiring rap star who, as Mr. Affleck tells it, put his professional life on the line to star in a bit of gonzo filmmaking, modeled on the reality-bending journalism of Hunter S. Thompson. I'm Still Here was released last week by Magnolia. But he goes on to say, the reviews were so angry, said Mr. Affleck, who attributed much of the hostility to his own long silence about a film that left more than a few viewers wondering what was real. The drugs, the hookers, the childhood home movie sequences in the beginning, and what was not. He says virtually none of it was real. Not even the opening shots, supposedly of Mr. Phoenix and his siblings swimming in a watering hole in Panama. That, Mr. Affleck says, was actually shot in Hawaii with actors, then run back and forth on top of an old video cassette recording of Paris, Texas, to degrade the images.
Come on, you got to give it credit.
You got to give it credit. He actually goes on to say, I never intended to trick anybody. He said, the idea of...
That's exactly what the film
Well, he
is.
Says here, he goes on to say, he says, Mr. Affleck, an intense 35-year-old who spoke over a meat-free, cheese-free vegetable sandwich on Thursday, said sounds the like idea douche. Of a, quote, hoax, unquote, never entered my mind. He said it was just performance art. It wasn't supposed to be tricking anybody. It was just performance art. I think he's selling that a little short.
I think he's full of shit. I'm sorry, but there is no other way that you can take that. No, they have avoided the subject. They haven't talked about it. That is exactly what you're doing. You are trying to trick people.
Well, actually, no, look, I'm Assface has said he didn't trick anybody. People are just too quick to believe that actors have gone insane. True. But at the same time, there's a few factors that came into play here.
Because that's a lie. Because they have tricked people, because to not say anything doesn't mean that you're not. Like,
true. I mean, okay, yeah, okay, granted. But the
if
idea...
If someone asks you point blank, is it or isn't it, and you refuse to answer, you're tricking people.
That's true. And he actually goes on... he doesn't go on...
If people have dug deep enough... Like, as you were saying, what was it? That guy that brought up the fact that if you go back... And actually think about it for a moment, they're related via, you know, he's his what?
Brother-in-law.
Yeah. It's like, there's no way you would let somebody that you were that close to.
Well, yeah, that was brought up
like
on the Slash
that.
Film
exactly.
cast, which
yeah,
I thought
no.
was very interesting when they actually said, if this was real, I mean, the bottom line is, if this was real, Casey Affleck is his brother-in-law, and he's sitting there videotaping him, you know, snorting coke off Hooker's chest and stuff, why wouldn't he be getting him help?
Exactly. No,
you know,
I don't
it's like
that.
So. Look, they fooled the world, but I got to just say, we called it a few weeks ago. We were looking at that Letterman clip again. We were looking at the little hints and so forth, and we said this is fake.
Yeah,
I thought so.
And according to now, where is it? Dave Schecht, one of David Letterman's writers. He goes on to say, Dave knew about it, and Dave loved it because he could play along. It was great television. This is his quote in the New York Times again, sorry. He says, it was great television, but I will take credit for the line, I think I owe Farrah Fawcett an apology. That line was mine. I gave that to him during the break. I've told people that everyone was in on the joke, and not only don't people believe me, they tell me that I'm wrong and that Phoenix is a schizophrenic and he needs help and he's going to end up like his brother, River, who died of a drug overdose in 1993. I said, no, I saw the segment notes. It's an act. I saw Ben Affleck's brother taping the whole thing from offstage.
Mm. There you go.
So it is, and by the way, that whole Farrah Fawcett line, if you didn't understand it, was because Farrah Fawcett was actually on the show in the previous years, and she was distracted and rambling, and she basically, it's Letterman made lots of jokes at her behalf, and then he said, I think I owe Farrah Fawcett an apology because Joaquin Phoenix was worse. Yeah. Anyway, so there you go. Confirmed by A, the director of the film, and B,
I'd just
somebody
like
behind.
To say,
it is
Octane,
fake.
Octane in our chat room, I disagree with that statement. I'm sorry. I actually think Joaquin Phoenix is a very talented actor.
I agree, too. I think Joaquin Phoenix is a way talented actor. Look, he did a remarkable job in Gladiator. He did a remarkable job in Walk the Line. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a guy who didn't know music. He taught himself to play. He taught himself to sing and mimic Johnny Cash. He's an amazing performer. I think he's a little bit self-indulgent for his own good.
Oh, sure, dude.
But that's a whole different issue. I think talent-wise, he's a very talented actor. Where does River Phoenix fall into this? I think River Phoenix was probably actually more talented, but River Phoenix was obviously also very self-destructive.
Oh, yeah.
But and it worries me sometimes when this actually happened. I think one of the things that gave this more merit than it deserved was the fact that people went, the Phoenix lineage.
Yeah, exactly.
And they basically went, is he self-destructing like
No, they
River
went, he is.
He is self-destructing like River is.
And that's where I do agree with Arseface in saying that, yeah, people are very quick to judge. And it's like, it took no time at all. Yeah. Like, I do actually believe that he probably didn't intend it to go as far as it did. Like, that wasn't their intention when they started it. But I believe they had a very strong handle in making sure that it didn't go too public that it was a fake.
Well, they kept a lid on it for a long time. They did a remarkable job. That was almost like James Cameron type secrecy.
Yeah,
you know, they did an amazing job. And I suppose keeping it in the family like that is one of the things that can actually, you know, do that for you. But Octane says he can't stand him. That's fair. Everybody has their own opinion.
Absolutely.
And, you know, everybody has an opinion and everybody has their own tastes. And I do know other people who don't like Joaquin Phoenix, and that's fine. I actually got to tell you the truth. I didn't like Joaquin Phoenix either early in his career. I always thought he was kind of like a pale comparison to his brother, and I always thought he was kind of odd. But he grew on me, and
I love the odd actors, though. That's one.
Well,
thing
I love odd too. That's an interesting thing. Stop rattling your cables. People on audio podcasts are going, "What the hell is that?"
I like Joaquin Phoenix, but I'm kind of torn about this news because it was pretty obvious, and like when he started doing it. And I was like, wow, King Phoenix has gone crazy. And then it was like, Casey Affleck just happens to be everywhere he is with the camera. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's completely and now that he's just come out and been like, oh, it's like gone through the festival thing and, you know, they've sold it.
Well, it's been released now.
Suddenly he's like, oh, well, that was a fake.
Well, see, and that's what says to me, you were trying to trick people.
Yeah.
Otherwise you would have come out, you would have said it was a mockumentary from the very beginning and it would have been done.
The second that you no longer needed to fool people, you would have made it very obvious.
Now, the question I have is, are there going to be repercussions about this? There's already been word in the industry of people saying, well, you know, it was kind of unfair. Because of the stunt... That stunt happened on Letterman and other shows at a time when Joaquin Phoenix was supposed to be promoting his new film. And so the film didn't really get promoted because people went, why do I want to see a romantic comedy with this whack job in it? Mm-hmm. You know? And so now, a year down the track, are we starting to look at it and go, oh, are there going to be repercussions about this? Are the producers of Two Women, who he was supposed to be promoting, going to say, well, you know what? You didn't fulfill your contract.
But you know? Was it in the contract?
I don't know. And this is what I'm saying. Well,
it's in the contracts that you have to...
You have to junk it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do it.
Well, and he could argue, legally, he could argue, I did turn up. He was there. Mm. You know, the film did get mentioned.
He never did anything to actually damage the film. Yeah, but very apparently the way that he looks...
You could argue that his general appearance looking like, you know,
he's not exactly romantic lead material.
Yeah. You know? Okay, fine, films. But I can't imagine that there is. You have to be a particular way dressed to sell this particular film. No contract goes into that much depth. I guarantee you that. Whether or not they're going to try and pull it on legal points, I assume they will.
Because the other factor is that Two Women, or whatever, I think it was what it was called, wasn't it? Two Women, the Gwyneth Paltrow movie, whatever. Correct me if I'm wrong, guys. It didn't do very well at the box office. Got great critical acclaim, but didn't do very well at the box office. And it makes me wonder whether or not this stunt may have had something to do with its slide, you know? And there's no way of telling, and that's the problem, there's no way of knowing, but I'm wondering if there are going to be repercussions. Now it is officially out that it was fake. He wasn't really losing his mind. Are people going to say, well, in that case, you owe us, you know?
I wouldn't be surprised if they did that.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised either. I'm going to wait and see what actually happens. Guys, Walking Dead news.
I'm so excited.
Me too. Official poster has been released. If you go to the AMC, official AMC website, you'll find all sorts of good stuff. Here's the official poster, and I just put up on geekactually.com today. Unfortunately, I don't have it on the board because it was literally just before we started filming. I put it up, though. Go check out a new behind-the-scenes, 4.5-minute behind-the-scenes video of Walking Dead. Really good stuff. Shows clips from the show, shows behind-the-scenes, interviews.
I'll be back in a minute.
Really good. So when we're finished up here today, shoot over to the website and have a look at that because it's well worth having a look at. I am so eager to see this series. Was that you again? Was that me?
Oh, no, I'm on silent. That was you.
That was me that time.
Yeah.
Oh, snap.
We are such wankers with our phones.
Mine's in silent now, so I usually turn it in silent.
Mine's always on silent, Dave.
I know. People actually try and call me, you know?
Oh! I'm not even going to go into that because we both know that I get more phone calls than you.
Okay, moving right along. I want to talk about the fastest pitch to turnaround I have ever seen in history. All right. Now, this is in good humor, so it may not really be the fastest turnaround, so don't take me literally. But I just wanted to throw this out there to show you how much power J.J. Abrams and Lost actually have. I actually have a picture here of the actors Terry O'Quinn and Michael Emerson. Terry O'Quinn was Locke. Michael Emerson played Benjamin Linus from Lost. J.J. Abrams, on the 20th of this month, pitched an idea for a new show, just threw it out there and basically said he wants to cast these two actors as basically retired former Black Ops agents in a series that would be kind of comical and have a bit of fun with it. On the 22nd of this month, NBC announces new J.J. Abrams series starring Michael Emerson and Terry O'Quinn as two former Black Ops agents. And J.J. Abrams sold it literally in 2 days.
I love J.J. Abrams has turned into like the Stephen King sort of.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's like a lamp monster.
They just need to sell a twist, and as long as he sells a twist, everyone will buy it, which is the complete opposite to M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah, exactly. Get rid of the twists.
He's like, you know, we're going to have a house, and they don't know what the house is, but they're all in the house for 12 seasons. And they're like, I like it. We'll buy it.
Done.
Sold. So anyway, I just found that very amusing at how fast they could turn over a particular project. I like the fact that Slash Film also reported this earlier in the week, and they actually said they are convinced that J.J. Abrams is cloned. Because no man could be working as hard as he is in Hollywood. He seems to have his hand in everything. The man must never sleep.
Scary. Cocaine.
Cocaine.
A lot of cocaine.
Seriously, man. A lot of cocaine.
All right. We're going to have a look at a trailer here. This came out this week. This is the second trailer for the new Harry Potter film.
Now, that's really cool.
Oh, this is a great trailer. Now, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows has been split into two films. The original trailer came out. It actually advertised both. This is just an ad for part one, because it's coming out in November. And here you go. Here is the second trailer for Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows part one.
These are dark times, there is no denying.
Tell me where he is.
Our world has faced no greater threat than it does today. But you can't fight this war on your own, Mr. Potter. He's too strong.
Have infiltrated the ministry.
You have nothing to fear if you have nothing to hide.
The longer we stay here, the stronger he gets.
I must be the one to kill Harry Potter.
We need to get off the streets, get somewhere safe.
I'd say we get undercover before someone murders him.
That way they won't know which Harry Potter is the real one.
They are coming.
Nobody else is going to die. Not for me.
We have to do something.
You think I don't know how this feels?
You don't know how it feels. Your parents are dead. You have no family.
He's after you, Mr. Potter.
Tell me where he is.
You really don't stand a chance.
I got him!
Help me!
I have seen your heart, and it is mine.
I don't know about you, but that looks pretty fucking epic to me.
Yeah. I definitely am.
I am not a fan of I stopped watching after the third one.
Really?
Maybe the fourth one. I don't know. They sort of, it was like, oh, okay.
So I think they took a definite turn in the right direction when David Yates took over as director, because he's directed 4, 5, and now 6. No.
Okay.
Five, six, and now seven. Yeah. And so they've got this continuity running across these last three. And I really like his style. In fact, I remember coming out of the Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, which was the first one that he directed. And I thought, it's a real shame because he brought great depth to the film. It looked great. It was really well made. But to me, that's the weakest book. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, it's really unfair to him to give him this weak story. It's the Back to the Future 2 complex again, you know? And they kept him, and he got to really do well with the last one. The last film I thought was fabulous. And now to bring him back...
Maybe I should go and watch him again.
Yeah.
Well, definitely before. Because this one, because that looks fucking amazing. I'm sorry.
It's great.
Regardless of Harry Potterness.
The only thing that this film is going to have is it's going to be the most frustrating film since the Matrix films. Because it's going to go end. Mm. And it's going to go to be continued, and we don't get the next one until July. And it's like, God damn it. I hate this splitting stuff in two shit. Just make it 4 hours long and be done with it, you know? As far as I'm concerned. And somebody, I think IMS Face said, Hermione's looking like a supermodel. All I can say is, she's looking pretty nice.
She's a babe.
Yeah, she's looking pretty good. All right, we're going to move on. You know, we're actually for the first time ever, I think, on film, actually, since we broke the trope, actually on track, time-wise.
In fact, that's a bit scary.
Probably a
I'm
little
confused and scared.
Probably a little bit early, but I think that our top five list is actually going to take us a little while. So we will get started on this. Mm-hmm. Now, this week for our list of five, we've decided to. I've decided because these guys didn't actually get back to me, so I just made an executive decision and, and said five must see foreign language movies because we really don't want to watch The Girl. Yeah. Who played with fire.
Shit you can watch instead of
The That's Girl right. Who Played with Fire. Foreign language films that you can watch instead of The Girl Who Played with Fire. And we'll let Callum, because he's our guest, we'll let him go first. So you're number five, Callum.
Okay, mine are in no particular order.
That's okay, neither are mine.
I had to pick this one. Let the right one in.
Oh, yes.
I had to pick that one because I think that's one of those classics of vampire movies that's going to stand out.
Agree with you 100%. I think I'm surprised it's actually low, but yours aren't in order.
Oh, they're in no particular order.
Right, no particular order. Okay.
And yeah,
now, you weren't here for our review. What is it about that film that actually really grabbed you?
It's hard to put your finger on it. It's like, I think a lot of it was to do, I really like the little girl, whose name I can't remember, but she was really fucking creepy.
She was,
and I
liked
the fact that they use really subtle CG to make her, like when she's hungry, her eyes get bigger, things like that. I just really love all the performances. The performances of the kids, I think.
For me, that's the key, is that in Let the Right One In, the two leads, the two kids are amazing. And their chemistry is amazing. Mm. And when I've heard that they were making an American remake, my first reaction was, who the hell are you going to get to be in this? Mm. And the fact that they put Chloe Moritz as the girl, I'm still not sold on. I think we're going to see her as Hit Girl, and we're not going to get past that.
But she still kills people, so.
True, but it's a very different kind of character.
I'm going to suck your blood, you cunts. But I don't like the, what's the little kid's name that they're doing in the American one?
Oh, I can't remember now, but yeah, no. Although he looks physically like the other kid, though.
He's pale.
Yeah, pale and blondish, you know.
I don't like the like cutesy little American kid, and there's always like five child actors. You only ever go to like two of them because they just get cast.
I have to say, Josh is being very quiet here, so I know that the film is on his list because he's being very quiet. Mm-hmm.
No, actually, that one's not on my list.
Oh, really?
I was actually having a chat room discussion. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Look, Let the Right Ones In actually isn't on my list because as much as I like the film, and it was very good, it's not in my top
Cody Smith
lists.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. I thought it would
like,
be.
Like, I mean, I enjoyed what it was, and it was a very different take on what it was, but the more I rewatch it, it's not the kind of film that goes into the list that I've got, which are the films that I can just rewatch over and over and over again.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, no, it's too grueling for me to watch constantly. You know?
That's fair. No, that's fair enough. Okay.
But again, that's just me.
What is your number five?
My number five is actually Hard Boiled.
Oh, yes!
It is just balls to the wall, amazing action. It has a great cast, and it is just fucking ridiculous. And that makes it an amazing.
I actually tossed around the John Woo films, and I sat there going, you know, there's this and there's that and so forth. There's actually, I was talking to you outside of the show, there's three John Woo films that I just adore, I love. Mm. And none of them made my list for some reason. I don't know why. But yeah. I would put all John Woo's early Hong Kong films onto an honorary mentions list. Easy.
Yeah.
Okay. If you haven't seen Hard Boiled, by the way, Saving the Babies is quite frankly one of the best moments in cinema history. All right. My number five is 1988's Cinema Paradiso, which I'm going to say with a caveat, though, which is unfortunately on DVD in this country, you can only get the director's cut. And it is the one example where I would actually say the director's cut is not as good as the original cut.
Really?
The director's cut added stuff in that didn't need to be added in.
Mm.
It was just an excuse to add more footage. Mm. And for me, Cinema Paradiso is one of those very beautiful, perfectly rounded films. It just did what it had to do and got out. Mm. And to add more to it kind of spoilt the balance. But the original cinema version of Cinema Paradiso is just beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's a film that is wistful and magical, and you can watch it over and over and over again. It's just a beautiful film. And I always love the acceptance speech from the producer of the film when he won the Oscar for Best foreign language film. And he got up and he said, I want to thank this person and that person in his very broken Italian English. And he goes, but most of all, I want to thank myself, because without me, the film would not have been made. And I love that. All right, Callum, you're number four.
Okay. Do we have to do the foreign names?
No. Do
attempt
it.
Them. Well, I'm going to attempt them.
attempt away.
Los Cronocrimes. The time crimes.
Time crimes, okay.
Spanish language time mind fuckery movie.
So many people have told me to watch this. I finally got my hands on a copy of it, and I won't watch it because as soon as I put it in, I realized it was fucking dubbed. And I went, I will not watch it dubbed.
I have an undubbed version.
Sorry?
You'd like it.
You have a subtitled version?
Yeah,
yes. You watch it, yeah. I want it subtitled. I've been told so many good things about this film.
Yep.
It
is, well, I will get it too.
It's one of those movies that obviously like a... somebody who doesn't have a lot of money. He obviously made it on the smell of an oily rag. And
I love that statement.
It's so small and just perfectly written. And
yeah. They have just spent so long developing the storyline to that movie. It's just, there is no fault you can put on that film.
Apparently the time logic is almost seamless.
Exactly, which is
very hard to do.
Yeah.
We've got Octane in our chat room saying City of Lost Children should have been out there too. I would actually go so far as the City of Lost Children is really good, but I actually prefer Delicatessen, their first film, which I thought was great. But we'll come back to that.
Some people might have that shit on
their head. Well, and they might.
They might have that shit on their
head. Oh, good.
Yeah.
chat room.
That's me.
It is you.
Number four is a martial arts film called Ong Bak. If you have not seen it,
I have seen it.
It would have been higher on my list about 2 years ago, but the more I watched it, the more I realized he is a bit of a one-trick wonder. When you watch the rest of his films, he is a very good fighter, but
he's a terrible actor, though.
and he's also one of those fighters that his martial arts is more about simple, effective moves, not really flashy things, so they don't translate quite so well a few times over. But the first film has some of the most amazing action you will see, and also sets out to prove itself to be the greatest martial art by basically destroying almost every other martial art style in this film. And it is quite impressive to watch some of this.
I watched Ong Bak a few months back, actually. I finally got to see it. And yeah, no, it's dazzling.
Yeah. If nothing else, just visually.
He made two more and then decided to become a Buddhist monk.
Well, what was funny, the story behind it, apparently in the middle of making part three, he disappeared. He just wandered away.
Mm.
And he just went off to meditate. And kind of lost all credibility, and they had to finish the film without him.
Yeah.
Because he just disappeared. And then he showed up later and he was a monk. And it's like, halfway through making the film, it's just like, oh yeah, I'm bored. Well, he's a very strange fellow. anyway, so yeah, it was good. I don't know if I'd put it on my list because, aside from the action, the acting is terrible. It really is.
Look, it goes on my list entirely for what he's saying. Yeah. It's like, you don't need a storyline because... the few moments of storyline. There's actually a version on the disc which has less in it. It's just the action, basically. And if you watch that version, it's fantastic because there's none of the bullshit little conversations or anything like that. It's just him running from location to location and beating the crap out of people. That's all I went in there to watch.
That's cool. Cool. All right, my number four is a film, I don't know if you guys have seen this or not, 1990 film called Tati Danielle.
No.
Now, Tati Danielle is quite frankly one of the funniest films I've ever seen in my life, and it's about the meanest old woman you'll ever meet. She's so mean and bitter. This scene's
what
like,
country is it from?
French. It's French. Yeah. It's very French. And there's a scene in it, as an example, where she arrives at the person's house, and instead of walking up the driveway, walks through the flower bed just to kick all the tops of the flowers off. She's just this horrible, mean old hag of a woman. It is awesome. A very funny film, need to get a copy of this. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to see it since... like 1990, and I want to see it again because it's a very funny film. As soon as I was making this list and I said Tati Danielle, my wife just went, oh yes. So well worth having a look at. Alright, Callum, number three.
I just want to mention I've accidentally written down six.
Oh, that's
and I could have gone.
Oh, me too. There's so many.
Dude, this is just like the basics list. It's like if you haven't seen these, you must watch them.
That's right. I've actually got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 honorary mentions. So,
well, you can add in the honorary mentions.
The 1946 La Belle et la Bête. The Beauty and the Beast.
Oh. Ah.
It's French. This is the original of the French. thing, and it's just so perfect. And it's obviously the Disney one stole a lot. Less talking teacups in this one, but
I'm sure
Disney,
yeah.
Disney one stole most of the stuff from this one, and it's just beautiful. Beautiful movie.
Ah, it'd be interesting to see that one. The problem with a lot of these films is that some of them are not on DVD, some of them are not not available, they're hard to find.
And then if you do find them, they're usually hacked to pieces and tried to be recreated, which never works.
Most of the ones, in fact, most of the ones I'm talking about today are things I saw at the cinema, so, you know, hopefully you can find them or source them from somewhere. Josh, your number three.
My number three is La Femme Nikita.
Oh, yes.
Look, I mean, as obvious as that movie is, it's like this is, and we're leading up to my number two, which was my first, but this was one of my first ever foreign films, and it blew my mind because
I have La Femme Nikita in honorary mentions.
Exactly.
It is
one of those films where I watch it, and no matter how many times I watch it, it's like every part of it I enjoy. Like, there's nothing missing from that film in mind. It was a toss up between that and Leon. Though I think Leon is probably the better film, and it's kind
yeah, but
of
it's
in
but it's English language. That's the
exactly
that's the
which
issue
is
with it.
The whole thing. It's like
it's French, but it's an English language.
Exactly, so. And that's why you know I can't.
I almost put it on my list. I thought, no, it's not actually in French.
Exactly, and like I mean, it was the first choice, but then when I thought of that point, I was like, all right, I can't use that. Because
but let's put Leon down
films.
As an honorary mention because Leon, if you haven't seen The Professional, Leon or The Professional, depending on which way you look at it. It's a truly staggering film. And on Blu-ray right now is the definitive cut. So go get it. Yeah. You know, there's no reason not to see it. Really, really good stuff. With a very, very young performance by Natalie Portman. Staggering.
Yeah, still good.
And disturbing in many ways. but yes, no, I agree with you. I think La Femme Nikita is wonderful. Callum, number two.
City of Lost Children.
Oh, wait a minute. Did I do my number three? I didn't do my number three. Hold that thought.
Forget what I said.
Forget what you said. My number three will be really brief because you've already touched on it. My number three is Let the Right One In. I think Let the Right One In is a terrific film.
Yeah.
And one of the best films of last year, quite frankly, I think. Okay. Whatever language. Go for it.
City of Lost Children.
Hey, what do you know?
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. So Jean-Pierre Jeunet is so weird and just... I love his... filmmaking style. Ron Perlman's fantastic. Apparently Ron Perlman didn't know French and he learnt all his lines phonetically.
Oh, that's very interesting. And now that you've mentioned that, I've just realised I've got another honor.
Jesus.
I was going to put down Delicatessen, but the only time I've ever seen Delicatessen is actually in French. I don't know enough French to be able to follow it. And yet I still knew what was going on. Which I think is...
Well, Delicatessen is such an abstract film. It really is. But it's a great, very interesting film. Great set pieces. I remember seeing it was so unique for its time. But I've got another honorary mention, but I don't want to mention it just in case it's on somebody's list. All right. But yes, no. But City of Lost Children is beautifully designed. I love the design of City of Lost Children.
The idea. All the like, midgets and the...
All right, Josh, number two
is the first foreign film I ever saw in my life, and when it was put on for me, the person actually stopped the film and actually went back to the DVD menu. This is back when DVDs in New Zealand were just nowhere, so the concept of watching it on DVD was a special thing.
So last year.
But he then went in and put on the Japanese as opposed to the English dubbed. And said, you have to watch it this way because it's so much more powerful like this. And I'm talking about Akira.
Oh, yes.
When I watched Akira for the first time, I rewatched it 4 times that day.
I saw Akira was actually at a cinema when it first got released, and I saw it dubbed because that's how it was released at the cinema. And I thought it was a great film, and I really enjoyed it. But then I got it on VHS when it came out, and it was subtitled, and I went, oh, my God, that's so much better. Yep. And now I own it on DVD.
Exactly.
Because in its original language, and I'll match this for all anime, see it in its natural language, because it is meant to be. The voices don't do – the American and the English voices don't do it justice.
I saw this at the Graphic Festival recently when Regurgitator was doing the soundtrack. And it was... I actually think the Regurgitator soundtrack's better than...
Oh, I disagree. I think the Yamaguchi, I think his name is. His soundtrack is awesome. I've got a copy. It's brilliant.
Well, yeah. It's really good. I just think if you're in
you
there watching
heard
it in
the
cinema...
I don't care about it.
And it's always... It's a fantastic film. And it's just amazing. And I'd never seen it on the big screen before. Yeah. Oh. Seeing it on the big screen, especially the climax on a big screen is just like...
Yeah, and the film still doesn't make any sense to me, but it's just awesome to watch.
I love that film.
I love how the first half of it's very, very grounded. The first half is, you know, biker gangs and, you know, and all that. It's all very grand. Second half, it just loses just like, its freaking mind. Second, it's like, let's just go big blobby monsters. it's like, okie dokie. Mm. All right, so my number two is an Italian cinema verite film from 2008. We actually reviewed it on this show called Gomorra.
Mm-hmm.
About basically mob life in the commission flats and so forth in Italy. It is a brilliant piece of filmmaking, incredibly affecting. I watch it again in a heartbeat. It's at the same times as being touching and funny, it is also incredibly disturbing at how these people live. Mm-hmm. And apparently very true to life. So very, very good. Brutal film, though. Beware. Mm. Brutal film. And available on DVD. Get it out now. You're number one.
It's kind of hard. I chose M.
Oh, good film.
M. I mean, it wasn't hard to choose that because I think that's amazing. I have DVD. I even bought a graphic novel.
Yeah.
And every single panel of the graphic novel is a painting. It took this guy like 7 years to finish.
Oh, wow.
And it's amazing. It's like graphic novel version of the film. It's just fantastic. And I love that movie. I think it's inspired so many. I mean, it's one of the best serial killer movies.
Interesting. Isn't M silent, though?
Yes.
So technically not foreign language.
Well, actually, interestingly enough, the exact same reason one of my titles is in honorary mentions and not actually...
And I think I know the one you're talking about. Exactly. Which is why I didn't put it down.
Yeah. I still... It has to be said.
No, but M is an amazing film.
All right, well, my number one...
And if you guys, you know, out there, if you're listening and you haven't watched some of these early silent films...
Yeah.
There are some masterpieces out there that you just watch and just go, wow, the stuff that they achieved on the money they had and the resources they had is phenomenal. And Fritz Lang was one of the best.
Yeah.
Anyway, your number one?
My number one is, unfortunately, a film which is not as powerful as it was when I saw it the original time. Wreck is the name of the film.
Oh, yes.
Look, for fans of horror, it was really effective. The only unfortunate thing is everything has been stolen from it. It has been redone. Americanized.
Quarantine.
It has a sequel, which once you watch the sequel, actually makes the first one a little bit less... It makes it a different film to watch because it changes things that you establish or believed when you first watched the film. But... Wreck was an amazing piece of cinema, and there are sections of that film that are filmed in one shot, like huge portions of the film that are all one take, and it's really, really well done. It is an amazing film, and it is actually the only film I think I've ever seen that I can actually say I completely forgot that I was watching something filmed through a camera, like as in it's supposed to be through a camera. It's one of the only films that has actually let me detach. It has been the only film that I haven't sat there and gone, why the fuck are you still filming?
And
there are so many films that piss me off like that, and this is exactly what I'm talking about.
I still have to see it. I still have not seen it. But I also have avoided quarantine.
Yeah,
I looked at it a few times, but I've avoided quarantine because I said I want to see Wreck first.
Yes.
So
I was really surprised at how they it's watching it through like a film camera. It's obviously
it's like a news camera, sort of, isn't it?
Yeah. But you never like when I was watching Cloverfield. Josh and I saw Cloverfield together. We came out of that movie kind of going, "The fuck just happened?" Like because everything, the whole movie's like the guys kind of going, "What? It's a monster!" And like with the camera. And it's really distracting from the experience. In this one, you never, like...
Once.
That. The only time you're doing that is because you're going, turn around, look over there, which means you're in the experience.
Yeah.
Especially the ending, where it's just fantastic. Almost pitch black, the last scene. You can just see a little bit. And it's just so minimalist, fantastic. With what they did, it was like one big set. It's just like a stairwell, basically, with some rooms in it. And it's one of the scariest zombie movies, I would say.
I have to see this film. I gotta see this film.
I don't want to see the second one now that you've told me that it ruins the first one.
Well, it doesn't ruin the first one. It just changes the experience because it changes the base things which you automatically assume because you're a horror fan. Mm. Like, you assume that it's zombie-related because of what you see. And then when you get into number two, that's not true. So when you relearn that, some of the moments are very scary, and it's actually quite a decent film, and it takes it to a different place. But kind of when you got to the end of that, you're like, yeah, that was good. Yeah. So, yeah, no.
All right. So, Josh, that was your number one, right?
Yes, it was.
Okay. My number one is actually a 1-2 punch. It's actually two films. But you can't watch them independently. You have to see both films. They're released in the same year. They're actually made at the same time.
Yeah.
It's the same crew, everything. They basically made two films, split it. Made one film, split it in half. Mm-hmm. It's actually 1986. It's the films Jean de Florette and Manon des Sources, or the Americans released it with its English title, which is Manon of the Spring. And it's an early Gerard Depardieu film. This is actually not only a foreign language film that you should see. It is actually one of my favorite films of all time. Yeah. It is. I sat down to watch it on video many years ago, and I to this day is one of the films I wish I could see at the cinema. I have not seen it at the cinema, and I remember sitting there going, "Oh, I'll just watch it, but this is probably going to be crap anyway." And I watched the entire film through, and it came to the end, and I immediately threw the sequel in because I had both tapes, and I immediately put the tape in, and I ended up staying up to like 5 in the morning watching this entire epic because it is just enthralling. It is a fantastic experience. Love these films, and if no other foreign films are seen, this is an experience that everybody should have.
So one more time, the title for people:
Jean de Florette, and the sequel Manon des Sources.
Awesome.
So excellent films and well worth having a look at. Now you've got a whole bunch of honorary mentions.
I only have three. Okay. Now the first two, one we've already talked about, Leon. It's not technically a foreign film, but like we were saying, you have to watch it. Metropolis, which has been mentioned in the chat room.
The chat room's been going, what about Metropolis? What about Metropolis?
Metropolis is unfortunately silent, so therefore it doesn't count in...
But it is German.
It is German, and
very German.
And this film is the backbone of anyone into film. If you have not seen this film, you must see this film. Yeah. This film is...
And we are actually about to be given the ultimate version of Metropolis. It's been released in the States. We're waiting for it here. I want to see this, where they found all that footage that was supposedly lost. We are going to get this restored version at some point. Please hurry up. I want to see this.
Yes, where I will be buying it.
No, I think Metropolis is a must see for any film fan.
Yep, absolutely. And the last one, which some people in the chat room has been mentioning, it does not go on my list because I do not class it as a film that I was like, that is the most incredible film, because when it came out, there were already films doing the same things, and the actual director had already done the same style of things in films previously, so it's not an amazing piece of cinema that goes on my top list, but Pan's Labyrinth was a good film.
I agree. Yeah, Pan's Labyrinth is a fantastic film. It's one of those sort of films where you sit there and you look at it and go, it's a great film.
Yeah.
It's a great film, but it's not like one where you sit there and immediately go, it's top of my list.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's not world-changing for me. It was a good film, but it was a good film. You know, like it.
I really liked it. I thought it was absolutely.
I was like, that was great. That was really good. But I wasn't like, oh my God, I need to own that or see it again or whatever. It was like, yeah, I watched it. It was good. It was great.
Yeah.
That was it. You know, so it doesn't go on my list, but it does deserve a mention.
Absolutely.
Well, I have two honorable mentions.
Yep.
Like, I could have gone on for ages.
I kind of did.
Well, I did this morning in between waking up, stumbling out of bed, and coming here. Nosferatu.
Nosferatu. The original Nosferatu or the Werner Herzog Nosferatu with Klaus Kinski. Either one.
Mm.
I don't care. The original is a masterpiece in its silent era day, and the Klaus Kinski one is a very interesting remake of it. So
It's a very good idea for a remake.
The Klaus Kinski one, it's not subtitled, though, is it? I think it's shot... Is it in English?
That's in English.
It's in English, yeah. It is in English.
I always remember the scene from that where the vampire guy, they're talking to him, and they're like, so... You're just like a method actor, right?
No, you're thinking of a different film.
Yeah, I was thinking of Shadow of the Vampire.
You're thinking of Shadow of the Vampire, which is a hypothetical about the making of really Nosferatu.
But anyway, Nosferatu is the one I was talking about.
The original black and white one is actually creepy. To this day, it's still creepy.
That's influenced every single vampire movie there is today.
And the Shadow of the Vampire was proposing the idea that Max Schreck, who played Nosferatu, was actually Nosferatu.
And my other one is Devil's Backbone.
Now, I've been told a lot of good things about it. I've never seen it.
It's really good.
I really want to see that.
Amazing, like, horror fantasy sort of thing. Like, I wouldn't call it... It's horror because it's about ghosts, but I wouldn't call it strictly... It's sort of in this, like, surreal orphanage in the middle of, like, a desert, basically. With the bomb in the middle of the orphanage, like an unexploded bomb from the Spanish Civil War.
Isn't... Now, Devil's Backbone is Del Toro as well, isn't it? Yeah.
Before Passover.
Yeah, but it was before Blade 2. I mean, it's one of his early films. Yeah.
He's got a like a Spanish Civil War sort of trilogy.
Yeah.
Which Devil's Backbone and the other one and Passover are the part of. I think he's going to do another one.
Cool.
Supposed to. But he's got the busiest slate of anyone ever of upcoming films, so make at the Mountains of Madness first and then go and do that as well.
He actually, I just read something, one of his films has just kind of been put on the back burner at the moment. Not The Hobbit, forget that. I mean, we know about that story. But he was working on something else and I think it just got back burnered for something else. So I don't know, he seems to be putting up more titles than fulfilling.
He's actually coming out with.
Yeah, anyway. So do you have any honorary mentions anymore?
No, no? That's
all right, I'm just going to throw out a few. We'll do these really fast because we've got to get out of here. I'm going to say a French film that really deeply affected me was Betty Blue in 1986. Seriously, seriously disturbing. It's all about a girl losing her mind, basically. This very hot, torrid romance, and then she starts to lose it. Yeah. Fantastic film, though. La Femme Nikita I had on there. By the same director as La Femme Nikita, The Big Blue, which I thought was just one of the most staggeringly beautiful films I've seen. It was, the way it was shot was just staggering. Waltz with Bashir, I thought was an amazing documentary slash animated film.
God, that was... If I had have actually thought of it, that would have gone on my list for sure.
Life is Beautiful, the Italian film about the Holocaust.
Oh, wow.
Which is an amazing film. Les Fugitives, which is the film that Three Fugitives was based... Or The Fugitives was based on. Still, to this day, one of the funniest films I've seen in a long time. And then also, I kind of just I'm scribbling notes down here because I'm going, I picked one, but there's so many. The oeuvre of Akira Kurosawa. Quite frankly, I'm a huge Kurosawa fan, and I've written down Kagamusha, The Shadow Warrior, as one, but there are so many. You could look at Ran, you could go to Throne of Blood, you could do The Seven Samurai.
I was actually going to put Seven Samurai, but I couldn't remember if we ever got a released version that actually was in Japanese.
I've
never seen it apart from subtitled, so that's one of those few films.
It was actually one of the best VHS releases I ever bought, because I bought it, and on the back of the box, it said... Seven Samurai, language English, because, you know, they were never subtitled properly. And it said 97 minutes or something like that. And I went, it's the cut version. You know, we're never going to see it. And I put it in 3 and a bit hours later. Yeah. I'm still watching it. And they completely mislabeled the back of the box. It was subtitled and it was the full 3 and a bit hour long version. Nice. And it was like, yes, but did... You know, you could have told me in advance.
I kind of didn't have time for this, man.
So, but yeah, no, look, the Akira Kurosawa had some amazing things. I mean, Ran, each frame is like a painting. I mean, he just, it's just this glorious looking film. So, yeah, he is a director that you should have a look at. And Dursa Uzala, which is a Russian film that he directed, is remarkable. If you get a chance, which is just about this journey of this little, like, Himalayan guide and this Russian soldier as they march across the mountaintops, and it's just an amazing film. So really worth having a look at. So and the other one I just wrote down, scribbled down really quick because I forgot all about it, which is when City of Lost Children came out, Amelie. I think it's just a charming film.
There's a film which I'm going to go buy. I've finally seen it in stores and I've been waiting for ages. Every friend of mine that is into film has seen this film and has said this film is a must watch. And so I'm going to put it out there for everyone else because I hope that if enough people see it, then I'll force myself to go buy
What's the film?
The Prophet.
Oh, Prophet. I want to see this film so bad.
Everyone has just said, not one person, and they all get that look. You know that look that people get when you see a film that just changes you, where you just get that look where you're like, yeah, it was just amazing. Yes. And it's just... Everyone gives me that face, so I have been.
People have been telling me to watch this film
since
Jake went to see it way back when and told me I needed to go see this film.
Yeah.
And everybody is telling me it was nominated for an Oscar. And you just sit there and go, I have to see this film. I want to see this film. Mm. Apparently, it is quite brutal, though. So
Dude, it's not for the faint hearted.
No. Prepared for that. Anyway.
All for brutal films.
Yeah.
Well, as I say... Want brutal? Go have a look at Gomorrah as well if you get a chance. Gomorrah is fantastic, but it's pretty hard. Anyway, That's it.
My God.
My God, what a list. What a way to wake. Our list of five turned into a list of 25. All right. Let's do a little bit of housekeeping here. Thank you for that. If you agree or disagree with anything that we've had to say today, or you have some other foreign language films, thank you guys, or you have some foreign language films that we didn't mention and you would like us to talk about in the next show, send your feedback to feedback@geekactually.com, or you can leave a voicemail at 02-8011-3167, or you can Skype to Geek Actually. And you can leave a voicemail for our line. Now, we have a couple of friends that we want to just throw out a few shout-outs to. First one is, of course, to moviefanhouse.com. Now, I'm calling them out. Because I give them a shout-out on our show every week because I love the boys. You know, Jesse, Charlie, Brad, you know I love you guys. But, you know, I've been listening to Movie Fancast. I listen to Movie Fancast every week. And I haven't heard our show mentioned in quite a long time, boys. So I'm going to call you out and I'm going to say, boys, hello. All right, so let's see if they're listening to this show. Movie Fan Cast and Right This Instant, two podcasts that you can listen to by going to moviefanhouse.com or search for them on iTunes. We also have our good friends over at The Real Junkies, and they do mention us every week, boys. You can find them at weekendronin.com or on iTunes, R-E-E-L, Real Junkies. They are.
And I am very, very, very keen to do the show where we talk about Aftermath because I listened to what you guys said about the film and I very, very, very vehemently disagree with you.
Ooh, it's on. It's on. It's on.
And I hope you guys listen to this because I want emails.
When Aftermath comes out, any representatives of the Real Junkies podcast who would like to come on to the show via Skype and duke it out with Josh, we would gratefully have you on. All right. And
line that you say, where you say it's the best one we've had since the first one. Ain't gonna fly, man.
All right, cool. It's on. We also want to do a quick shout out to our very good friend, cartoonist Josh Spencer, who has done our new artwork for us. It's very wonderful. You find him at attackninja.blogspot.com. Get him for all your art needs. He is very, very talented. All right. Now, I also know about this other little website that I thought we'd talk about really quickly, which is this thing called rawdlc.com.
I've never heard of this site. What are
you, Josh, take it away.
Rawdlc.com is a gaming website. If you haven't been there, you should already be there right now. We do games, we review games, we have a live show that goes out, which is also available on iTunes. Just search for DLC. Come see us. We record 8 p.m. on Tuesdays. You should watch. It's lots of fun.
Very cool. Now, as I just thought I'd mention very quickly because I forgot.
Mm.
Foreign language films. The one I forgot, something I needed to mention, and something I could get off my chest. There is a new Chinese film coming out called A Woman, a Gun, and a Noodle Shop, or something like that, which is a remake of the Coen brothers' Blood Simple. And I watched the trailer. The trailer's online at geekactually.com. You can have a look at it. And all I can think is, why? Why? I love Blood Simple. I mean, I'm a huge Blood Simple fan. I think Blood Simple is just an amazing film. And I watched the trailer, and all I can think is, yeah, okay, great. And I remember I listened to a review recently, and they actually said, yeah, that's an amazing film. They deal with silence so well. And all I can think is, the Coen brothers did it first. You know, it's like somebody actually wrote a review, and I'll quote the review that actually said, the Coen brothers use silence as well as other directors use dialogue.
Yeah.
And that was a review from Blood Simple. And it was an amazing film in its own right. And all I could think is, why are we remaking? This is one of the weirder films to remake. And to do it in Chinese, period.
I find it kind of comforting that Chinese, obviously there's some, you know,
yeah,
money-grubbing Chinese producers out there, too. It's like, oh, we'll remake it in the Chinese version.
So I'm very curious to see it. I'm going to have a look at it. That's a horrible stereotyped accent. And Geek actually takes no responsibility for that accent.
I do want to say, though, that I agree kind of with Callum on this as well, though. I have to say it is kind of nice to see somebody, them stealing us, our stuff, as opposed to the other way around, because I always feel bad for being the owner.
Okay, before you go any further, I want you to go back and watch Hard Boiled again. Soundtrack to Hard Boiled. The reason why I say it is because the soundtrack to Hard Boiled is note for note copied from James Horner.
Yeah, I know. Okay, I'm not saying they've never stolen anything. It's just a nice to every now and then have a reminder that we're not the only country that does.
So, yeah. Anyway, we're going to get ourselves out of here. I think we're done. Oh, we've We should mention that we do some other podcasts.
We do a couple other things.
We do this tech show in the morning called Tech Actually, which you can find on iTunes. And we also do this thing called the Geek Actually After Show, which is coming up in about 10, 15 minutes, which is where we just leave the mics on and ramble on about whatever we want. Mm-hmm. We're actually thinking about talking about penetrative sex in mainstream movies. So, you know, that could, if that, you know, kind of tickles your fancy, you might want to stick around. And with that note, I think we're going to get out of here. I want to say, Callum, thank you very much for joining us.
Anytime.
Josh, thank you very much. Yeah, whatever. And chat room, thank you very much for joining us. Without you guys, it wouldn't be as much fun. Now, I couldn't find a track from The Girl Who Played With Fire for the end credits, because I couldn't find the soundtrack anywhere, quite frankly. And so I kind of went, what am I going to do for an end credit? Because
more Inception music.
Well, you know, I decided I decided that instead of going Inception, I decided that...
You never thought about Inception.
No, I didn't. I decided that we'd do Beowulf.
Okay, why not?
The Alan Silvestri score from Beowulf, because I like it. So here's a little bit of Beowulf to take us out in the end credits. Thank you very much, guys. We'll catch you all next week. Go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies, and we'll see you all later. Bye now.
Bye. I will slay your monster.